You are listening to episode number 115 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast.
Bind up! Bind up!
Welcome to the 115th edition of the Mighty Warriors Steve Marvel Podcast. As always and forever will be until Taser murders me like the cold-blooded murderer that he is, takes away the hosting job from me. I am your host, Iggy, a.k.a. Ben. Joining me tonight, the man who follows Rob Liefeld on Twitter, Mr. Brian Powers. Brian, welcome to the show.
I troll Liefeld for fun, the douche.
And, of course, the man who is running the greatest draft of all time currently, Mr. Arnold Alfred. Arnold, welcome to the show.
You.
And, of course, the man who I learned where to hate from, Taser. Taser, welcome to the show.
This isn't D-Cups. What the hell am I doing here?
D-Cups, which I actually guest starred on this past week, so, yeah.
More info on that.
Only one of us has been on your show. I want to bring that to the forward point here. Hey,
Blame.
Don't be hating, Taser.
Blame.
Well, at least two of
just
us.
Just because I got my shot at D-Cups and you didn't, dude.
No. I'm not talking about me. A-Train reads still reads DC. Yes. I don't read DC, so I have nothing really constructive.
That's all right. But somebody's got to treat him nice somewhere. The churros all ain't happening here.
No, hell no. No, I'm so disrespected as a host. Oh, are you talking about Bri?
It's all Kuhan's fault. Kuhan 2, that is.
Well, technically, it's Chris and Colto's fault because they didn't watch any of the damn Batman movies. So
it was
needed
also
a third Kuhan's
idea to invite Brian
slot.
Anyways. He just overlooked
Colto is all. Lazy. Lazy.
And don't forget Kuhan 2.
No, Colto isn't lazy. He's just poor.
And Chris is a slacker. I don't understand the words you're saying.
All right, well.
You understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
No one understands. We are the Mighty Warriors of Marvel Podcast. We are a weekly podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether that's comics, movie, video games, TV shows, comics, and maybe in 2 weeks...
Porn!
We'll see about that. Now, obviously, despite that San Diego Comic-Con has been over for over a month and 2 weeks, there's still some cons that are happening, and over the weekend we got Fan Expo 2012, which is the Canadian Comic Con, and
is
now
Comic-Con. What's a Canada?
America's hat.
Oh, okay.
So
is it a trucker cap?
So now we are going to go to Brian with the Fan Expo Marvel 2012 roundup. Brian, what happened exciting for Marvel?
Well, first thing we've gotten news of, apparently, is they've announced a creative team of Joe Keating and Rich Elsing who will begin a Morbius ongoing series spinning out of Amazing Spider-Man, the recent Lizard, Morbius, and Spider-Man storyline happening there. So, if you like vampires, kid, you're going to be getting your own ongoing. So,
yay!
let's see. There's news that some of the new mutants, as in the team that Taser keeps us posted on, will be heading into Jonathan Hickman's Avengers book. And also, there was a drop for the all new X-Men cover. Shows the Extinction Team.
Jared from Subway.
Yeah, I saw that.
you beat me to it. Okay, let's see.
Oh, you ruined it. You ruined it.
Hey. Oh, also, Ed Brubaker is leaving Winter Soldier. Yeah.
That means he officially has no, as of next year, no Marvel work at all.
Why are they doing that to Brubaker?
I don't know, but yeah, apparently the man who helped build up Bucky Barnes to the position he is in today will be jumping off that book. And make no mistake, he is largely responsible for Bucky Barnes'
resurgence.
Recent... Let's go with that.
Yeah, this is pretty much his character, despite that it's not.
Could you imagine like the laughs he got when he suggested, "Okay, I want to bring back Cap's sidekick from World War II. What do you think?"
That sounds ridiculous.
And it started the greatest Captain America saga we have ever known.
Pretty much, yeah. You know, good for him.
You haven't read much Captain America, but...
let me rephrase. The Captain America story of this generation. Better?
Does that work for you, Taser?
Yeah,
okay. Also, Iggy, you're going to love this one. There's been talk of the first arc involving Punisher Warzone, the limited series coming up.
I'm so amped up for that. You've been giving us weekly updates for... That's going to be my weekly update. Yeah. So
Punisher
excited.
Warzone, his first storyline will involve him taking on your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, and then the Mighty Thor. So, yeah, shit's going to hit the fan in that book.
I'm going to talk about Punisher later, and you'll see it's building up to something.
It's going to be bananas.
Yes, it is.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Okay. That looks to be about it. There's some other various little tidbits thrown around here or there, you know. Just to piss me off, there's been confirmation that the new... Nick Fury will be very important in the upcoming Marvel Universe, so fuck you, Marvel.
Hopefully they kill him and bring back...
God, I hope so.
Well, Nick Fury isn't dead, he's just...
He will be soon.
My God, I hope not.
Yeah, really, they're gonna kill him off. In fact, I think at the end of that series, Battle Scars, which, like, nobody read except for me, I'm pretty sure he lost the, Infinity Formula. I'm not even sure if that's possible, but I think that might have happened.
Hopefully Hickman will have the balls like, no, I want white Nick Fury. Give me
God,
give
I know. Hickman did such a good job with Nick Fury. Why are they doing this to us?
So now that we're segueing into the... Alright. Okay, I'll say this right off the bat. Mobius is an ongoing? Really? Like, that was my reaction to a lot of things, that not just Marvel-wise, but like some things that the other companies did. Like, really? That? Looking at you, Moloch. It's one thing to give Gambit an ongoing. It's one thing to give Carol Danvers another ongoing. It's another thing to, try all these. But Mobius, the living vampire.
Morbius.
I'm thinking of the artist Mobius.
That sounds right.
Morbius, the living vampire. A mini I could get, a two-issue mini at the best, but an ongoing? All right, I'm saying it right now. I'm saying the book is canceled at issue 5. Because there's no way that this book lasts longer than 5 months. I hate to say that. Also, you forgot to mention on the awesome Marcos Martin cover for issue 700 of all the names of Amazing Spider-Man that people worked on. That was
right.
Fucking cool.
That was cool. That was hats off to Marcos Martin for that cover.
It's cool. I mean, New Mutants and the Avengers teams. I'm not going to be reading Avengers, so I don't give a shit about New Mutants anyway. So I guess that's cool that a New Mutant's going to be an Avenger. I guess Taser's going to be.
Yay!
You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Also, I
don't mean to interrupt you, Iggy, but there was a little tidbit floating around that I wanted to get out of the way real quick. In the new X-Men like teaser posters and stuff going around, there are certain rumors that some of the characters therein might be the ones introduced in the first X-Men Neil Adams series, or they may be entirely new creations by Bendis. You know, there is that. So,
I don't know. I I'm just wrapped around Morbius? Really? I mean, that's...
Well, I don't... Does he do anything important in the... Because you're saying it's spun out of that Spider-Man series.
Recently in Spider-Man, he's been... There was a storyline that Slott had set up horribly, by the way, that there was a scientist working there, but he was... nobody knew his identity. Nobody knew who he was. And it was recently revealed that it was Morbius, and Morbius actually robbed Billy Connors out of his grave, like grave robbed, and was going to use his DNA to cure his vampirism or whatever. And so, yeah, and now he's in jail. Spider-Man actually beat the holy shit out of him.
Yeah, I would too.
Like, what the fuck is...
Dead body? Big deal. Dude, seriously, big deal. He stole a dead body, so what?
Taser, just because you do it on a weekly basis doesn't mean everyone else does.
What I'm saying is this. Okay, yeah,
but he stole... He's been, like, quote-unquote, reformed. Like, he's kind of trying, like, living normal, so him doing that's kind of like... Especially for a person trying to live as a normal society, that's kind of like, what the fuck is the matter with you when you're doing that? Morbius never seen the kind of guy who would grave rob people.
He was a little creepy.
Grave robbing, though.
Yeah. Still, though, it does seem really, really kind of... Yeah, now that you think about it, why the hell does Morbius get an ongoing?
That's what I'm saying. Really?
The most thing I've ever seen him do on his own was probably that Legion of Monsters miniseries that came out.
Yeah, miniseries fine. Do a one shot. But an ongoing is too much. Like I said, cancel the 5 issues. There's no way this shit lasts 5 issues. Not saying it will be shit, but.
Well, you're giving it less than Gambit, so I guess that's something.
Well, yeah, Gambit at least has a fucking following.
However small it may be.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. I don't have anything to say about Expo. Other than that, Morbius? Really? All right. Brian, what did you think of these announcements?
Well, you know, it's... What is it? As far as Morbius goes, I think I've pretty much stated my opinions there. You know, it's kind of like, Like you said, what has he done to prove he can hold his own in an ongoing... Like, I can understand a limited series, but an ongoing? Like, really? Yeah. Also, when it comes to Brubaker, jumping off Winter Soldier, I do find that kind of, you know, it's really final, because this is the guy who literally built up Bucky to be both the Winter Soldier, then he took him and made him Captain America... Then he killed him, and then he brought him back as the Winter Soldier again. And it's just, it's kind of crazy to think this guy who took a handicapped little kid.
It's really kind of an end of an era kind of thing.
It is, because this is really his final ties with the Captain America world that he'd been building since shit, when did he even start?
Either 05. I know it was
05?
That long ago?
It was 05, yeah.
Damn. Well, yeah, it's really kind of an end of an era for that guy. So, hey, hats off to Brubaker for sticking on the ship for this long. You know, God bless him.
And he's got a criminal movie coming out sometime, and
I'll be looking forward to that.
Fatale is doing well at Image, so I mean, the guy maybe he's like, you know, I don't necessarily need to work at Marvel that much anymore.
I do like more of his indie stuff than I do his mainstream company stuff.
That could be the case with a lot of things.
Yeah, I know, but still. Punisher Warzone. Yes. Originally, and pretty much still kind of now, I'm like, oh, Punisher. Yay.
You're not reading the book, so you don't understand the awesomeness of it.
But, you know, I don't get what the deal is with turning into Warzone, first of all. That one kind of escapes me. You know, it's like, I'll definitely check it out, because if he's going after heroes again, then that's always a fun little thing to read about Punisher, when he goes after, you know, heroes, because it's always like, what does he see in them that he wants to kill so bad? It really is just kind of like, well, why? Why do it? That being said, I probably won't give it too long before, do we know how many issues it is? Because it says
I think it's either a 5 or a 4 issue miniseries.
Okay. So I guess that'll just, you know, I'll jump on for it for like maybe the first issue, see where it's at, and then if it, I'll probably check out the second one, like, off the rack or something. But other than that, I probably won't, it'll just be kind of an outside thing for me. And then, that really is about it for me. You know, not a lot of thoughts, and not really a lot of news coming out of Fan Expo, but, you know, it's still a good amount to keep the fans, you know, teased until the stuff finally drops, so it'll be fun watching as the news continues to develop over the next few months or so, especially going into this whole Marvel Now debacle. But that's about it for me.
All right, Taser, you're the person who gives the least amount of shit about announcers to begin with, so do you have anything to say on these?
Nah.
All right.
Not at all.
Arnold. Do you have anything to say about these announcements coming out of Fan Expo 2012? You're cutting in and out, dude.
I don't know why. Can you hear?
No, you're still cutting in and out, bro.
And Arnold, what do you think of the announcements coming out of Fan Expo 2012?
Some of the news about the I think it proves again that Marvel, they'll try something new. They'll go out on a limb and risk a random book that nobody really thought that they were looking for or asking for or whatever the case may be. I do like vampire stuff. I don't know if I'm going to drop the extra money for it, but props to them. Some of the stuff is cool, I guess, but that's about it, really.
All right, well, there you go. Fan Expo 2012.
What a disappointment.
I'm just saying, I really can't wait for Warzone. He's going to end Greg Rucka's tenure on the title, but I can't wait till...
Oh, really? That's his last foray into Punisher?
Yeah, the last formal issue is 16, and then it goes into Warzone. So he said in terms of what he's been doing, it's the next logical step in his story, which if you've been reading it is. All right, well, there you go. Now, for the main event, the featured attraction, the anniversary issue.
Oh, God.
Amazing Spider-Man number 692 was our book of the week, a.k.a. the 50th anniversary issue of Amazing Spider-Man. 50 years ago.
Yeah. And just Stanley also...
and Steve Ditko and Amazing Fantasy number 15 created the character known as Spider-Man.
You'll understand why we're starting early once Ben gets into what his groove is, but you'll understand.
But before I speak, let's go to Arnold first. What did you think of the 50th anniversary issue, a.k.a. Amazing Spider-Man number 692? Take it away.
I have to say, in order of favorite story in it to less interested, didn't really like his first story, I think it would go backwards in the story. So the end story, then the middle story, then the... first story, like with most of his last stuff, not what I was expecting from the storyline, but not necessarily what I wanted either. To be honest, I kind of flew through it because it seemed run-of-the-mill, and as Iggy will get into it, like, it's been done before and you've seen it before, but I looked at it as an anniversary issue, and more often than not, I look at anniversary issues as just kind of out there. Like, I don't want to say that they had nothing to do with the overlying story, but at the same time, they sometimes feel like that. So I kind of just take what's in it with a grain of salt, because half the time, the things that show up in anniversary issues never get touched on again. So Alpha is what the teenager of this day would be like if he got superpowers, and it would be a kid that you want to kick in the fucking throat. Because most kids today, you want to kick in the fucking throat. So I, in terms of characterization, yeah, I totally see a kid like Alpha being like that until something really, really horrible happens to him to realize that he needs to stop being a fucking jackass, the same way it happened to Peter, although with Peter, it's a whole level, and
Peter was less of a dick.
Of course he was less of a dick, and you also have to look at the different eras when the books came out. Peter Parker, when Peter Parker first came out, was a kid for what the kid of his era was like. Just like this kid is a kid for...
Which is why kids today suck.
They're terrible. I'll leave that alone.
You know, they can't be taught and you know, nothing can hurt them, and the size of them, and you gave it that power where he realizes he probably can't get hurt at all, or is so super powerful. Yeah, he's gonna be a fucking asshole anyway. But it wasn't, I don't know, it was just kind of for me. Like, I don't despise it to high ends, but it's not something I was like, yeah, just fucking amazing. It didn't have that for me. The little story I enjoyed primarily because of the art, because it was a throwback to the old school Spidey art, which I loved. I thought that was good times. And last story, the art was also beautiful. You guys keep telling me who the artist is, and I keep forgetting. For the backup issue.
For the one that looked like Marcos Martin?
Is that who it was? Yeah, the one with house fire, the ship day for Spider-Man. Oh, it was art by Nuno Plotti. But I also like to remember I love his story in this. So, all in all, I would give the issue 3.5 out of 5.
Brown, what did you think of the 50th anniversary issue of Amazing Spider-Man?
I thought it was awful. I thought he deserved a hell of a lot better than this, but this issue just kind of pissed me off. I'll get into the main storyline for a second, but I want to touch upon the two backup features. The first one being Spider-Man for a Night. That one was kind of weird. It was kind of like surrealist, kind of like, hey, I found Spider-Man's costume. Now I'm going to go rob a bank, and then I'm going to say goodnight to my granddaughter. By the way, why is this grandpa still robbing banks and crap? Like, what? Did his Social Security not pan out or something? Or is he just kind of like... I don't get it, but he's like, he's freaking old, and he's just like, he's still robbing banks? What happened in life that didn't work out for you that just kind of, you're like, hey, I'm going to...
Tough economy, man.
Ugh. Okay. After that one, this one, the one at the back of the book, Just Right. The art was kind of weird. The art threw me. Kind of looks like Tim Burton used like claymation or shit to make this stuff happen. But it was just weird. Like the proportions seemed out of size and stuff. And the story itself was just kind of jarring because it's Peter Parker, you know, getting shit on, which is, you know, a lot of what he usually does, but it's even more so than usual. He is just getting literally shit on in one panel, which I thought was fucking hilarious. But it's just really, really weird, and at the same time, I'm kind of wondering how Peter Parker gets away with half the shit, like dropping the kid off at, like, Avengers Tower and stuff. Like, there's a scene where he meets Captain America, and he meets Iron Man, and he meets She-Hulk, and
Spider-Woman.
Yeah, by the way, the one thing where he throws out, where the kid's, like, confesses... He told him the Hulks were his parents, Hulk and She-Hulk, and he's like, okay, secondly, Hulk and She-Hulk are cousins, so, you know, ew. I thought it was fucking...
The kid would know that, though.
I know, but that my mind just immediately went back to Old Man Logan, which was fucking awesome, and I just kind of laughed at them. But moving on from that, the kid denies Spider-Man ice cream at the end. What a douche. What a douche move. Okay.
Now I want to on to Alpha.
I'll let Iggy get to the meat of it, but here's the basics. Kid is loser, or not really. He's not really a loser. He's just a nobody.
Yeah.
You know, Peter Parker was a true to life nerd in high school. He was a nerd. He was a loser. This kid's just kind of like drifts in the ether. Like no one really notices him. No one really cares. And then he gets into lab accident, becomes superhero, and. He's pretty much like the privileged version of Spider-Man. He gets everything Spider-Man never did. Like, he gets all the brains of the Marvel Universe kind of checking him out. And he gets, like, endorsement deals. And he gets to hit on women in his costume. And he gets to beat up jocks.
He gets the girl.
He's wish fulfillment for Spider-Man, I think, when he was 15 and got his powers. But that's not really what pisses me off here. I'm going to focus on one aspect in particular. There's a moment after he gets his powers... where he gets, like, strength, speed, force field projection, flight, all that good stuff. And then Reed Richards kind of pulls Spider-Man aside and calls him, he is an alpha-level threat, the first of his kind. And he compares it, like, this kid outclasses the Hulk, the Sentry, and the Phoenix all at once just by merely existing, which pisses me off more than anything else. How are you going to have this kid... who is essentially a godchild. He's Jesus Christ for all intents and purposes. How are you going to have him single-handedly rip an asshole into forces and creatures we've seen done do far, far worse than this kid has ever been? Like, they've done more. Oh my god, I'm blinded by rage right now. It's just, this kid sucks, okay? He just sucks. I really don't know how else much to say him. He goes from a nobody, a whiny little emo, to being a douchebag. That's all it is. And his parents, like, get off his endorsement deal, they get the money and stuff, and they have a fight. And there's something with Aunt May and Mary Jane that isn't important, even though they try to make it important, or... And then, one thing I did like, though... They brought back Giganto for this, which I guess is one of the old Silver Age from Fantastic Four comics, which I thought was amazing. And then then he has the nerve to call Spider-Man his sidekick. I'm gonna stop there because if I go any further, I'm just gonna take over Ben's position job, and that'll come later. But yeah, this pissed me off. I didn't like it. I'm not even gonna bother rating this one. I really just didn't like it.
Taser, what did you think of the 50th anniversary issue of Amazing Spider-Man number 692?
I didn't pay attention to the other two stories because I was laughing too hard at Point of Origin or whatever, the first story. I had fun because you realize what it was, and I could just see... I could just see Peter Parker just like face palming the entire time. But what tickled the living hell out of me was Reed Richards basically making him, making Alpha his problem. You know, it was like, well, you have to do something because blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hold up. Wait a second. You mean to tell me that there's no way that Reed Richards could have came up with like some type of control device that could have, you know, shut this kid's powers down or anything like that? Hello? Why don't we use one of those Tony Stark nano things that remove abilities? Yeah, there you go. There's a ticket. Take it away from him. You know, if he's an alpha level threat, which means what? He's at the early stages and he could grow to an omega? I don't know exactly what that's supposed to be.
Said he pretty much outshines every other mega level threat in the whole Marvel universe right now.
Yeah, by being a low level threat that could grow or some bullshit.
Pretty much, however, yeah.
The thinking was supposed to go, but I still think that's kind of retarded. And on top of which, we saw what the kid could do, and then we see what he did. And I'm, you know, I understand that we're talking scientific bullshit, in the comic realm, and you have to be willing to step aside and just accept the things that happen on panel. But if you tell me that a kid who can use one ability at a time, which basically turns him into Ultra Boy, and he's flies at Giganto at really fast speeds, and he changes it to super strength, and that does more damage than things standing there punching him. I'm sorry. I don't buy that for a minute. I'm really sorry. I don't buy that for a minute. No, I don't buy that. But you know, they needed somebody. They tossed Giganto into the pit. You know, it's like we gotta sacrifice some fucking him. There you go. And then he picked him up. He picked him up like no. He didn't pick him up. He was sitting on top of him, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he stood on top of him and he was talking. You know, talking smack and. to see Peter Parker just going, oh my god. And then Reed is like, you told him? Personally, I think Parker did right. You know, he came clean with the kid rather than, well, maybe if I, you know, politely guide him, maybe things will turn out. No. Be upfront and honest and, you know, see how shit handles.
But, well, yeah, because if he found out they were lying to him, he probably would have ripped shit.
Yeah, it'd have been Avengers Academy. Hey,
that's the most contrived storyline I think ever.
Well, so's this one, because it's like, hey, it's not the kid who has the powers, but he keeps it a secret and he lives a lonely and pathetic existence in high school. This kid lived a lonely, pathetic existence in high school, got the powers, and became a celebrity. Hey! It's the exact opposite of his life. So that's his private hell. somebody who gets abilities, revels in it, and I'm not going to say doesn't care, but he sees what the kid did to the jock who did the exact same thing to him, and I perfectly understand why the kid would do that. I can't begrudge him it, but I see why Spider-Man would get worried, because that can lead to places. That being said, I thought this was kind of a lazy story. It's too easy to do. I wouldn't have done it.
It's like a fan fiction, like a self-insert thing. This kid is God.
Yeah. Well, that's the way they're treating him. But I thought one of the most interesting aspects of it was, hey, he's got abilities, and you know what? We don't want to get sued, so we'll make him a superhero. Yeah, that's the ticket. And then you see the parents arguing over, hey, that product's going to start selling really good because he's promoting it. We should get a cut it out. I'm like, oh, my God. Well, you know what? That's parenting. You know, you have parents like that. I can't even say that's parenting nowadays, because truth be told, that behavior existed long before then, before now. The story was typical and predictable. It was nothing new. It's just one more layer of hell to put Peter Parker through.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I had to laugh. There was quite a few things that made me smile, none the least of which was watching his parents go from, you know, pseudo-concerned parents to, hey, our pockets, will we be able to fill them up? You know, and the kid going from nobody to, and I'm sure that girl is kind of misty-eyed because the kid saved the life, and misty-eyed because he's a superhero and he likes me. But, you know.
Oh, and he gets offended by
the same fucking guy, so she's
a whore. He gets offended by internet comments.
Because he's 15.
Yeah,
he's 15 and he's not limited. See, that's
show me a 15-year-old who isn't desensitized to the internet yet, though.
I could probably show you my nephew. Actually, my younger nephew, my older nephew, he's a bit, you know, stoic about shit.
Oh, by the way, the whole thing with Thing ranting about when the kid steals his catchphrase.
Yeah, I have that copyrighted. That was
there are rules. You don't see me saying "flame on" or "thing
that,
smash."
That was funny. And to see Johnny get on Spidey for telling him the truth, I thought that was like, wow. Whenever, you know, Flamehead has to dig on Spidey, you know somebody thinks he done fucked up. But altogether. I'll be honest, like we talked online, I see this might actually last a while, but I personally would care that it didn't. You know, I don't think Spider-Man needs a protege or a sidekick. This to me, you know what this looks like? This to me looks like, what the hell was her name? Secret in Birds of Prey. The girl who only showed up in Birds of Prey. You know, you didn't see her in any of the other Batman books. You didn't really mention her. And, you know, just before Final Crisis, she kind of disappears. And, you know, it's like, well, what happened to that girl?
Continuity punch.
Yeah, she was, you know, she was kind of just gotten rid of without any
Let's
big
just
fanfare.
Sweep her under the rug here.
But she was the same thing. She was a girl with abilities that Barbara Gordon was trying to, you know, control and mold into somebody. And that's what's going to happen here. That being said, I don't care to see it, you know. Other than that, I guess if I had to rate it, I do like A-Train and give it a 3.5. You know, I didn't have a problem with the art, unlike, you know, DJ Ixter. Ramos doesn't bother me. I've seen better art from him, but this wasn't bad. It was just predictable. You know? So, yeah, 3.5 Warriors out of 5 for me.
Okay.
Here we go.
Oh, God.
One
Bend
word.
Down hatches, people.
One
Wear
word.
Your flame-retarded underwear.
It's
coming! It's
an F5 category! Everyone
right,
down!
Let me... The backups were really fun. I really especially like the art in the last backup. Really reminded me of Marcus Martin. I just thought it was funny to take a sort of satirical... act on Spider-Man having a shit day. I thought it was hysterical. The second one I could live without. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great either. It was just middle of the road, which is fine. Alpha.
Oh, God.
Everybody knows Spider-Man's my number one character. I love him. I love Spider-Man. It's my favorite character of all time. This was god-awful. This was, in one word, disappointing. This is just my continuation of proving my theory that Slott lives in 1958 and writes like it's 1958, and which is fine. You know, I 1958. You know, great, fine comics of that time. You write that shit now, though. You're a fucking hack. It's so much. Not even the fact that Alpha is a complete asshole, a complete douchebag of a kid, like most kids are nowadays. But the fact that it's so hit you over the head with the steel chair, over and over. Now I know how Mick Foley feels. Over and over and over again. It's just lazy and wrong. You think it's fucking cute that oh look, it's gonna be the exact same way, but he's gonna like it comes off as lazy and that I don't have an original idea, so I'm going to mine the story that Stan Lee and Steve Ditko did all those years ago. They did 50 years ago. That's what it says to me. And the fact is, he's not going away. Like, he's going to be in the next issue. You know, that's what... It's just... It was awful. You know, like, it had its moments. Mainly, I really wanted Ben Grimm to actually punch him in the face. You know, I thought it was really weird that Reed Richards would just, like Taser said, to just hand him off to Spider-Man. I'm like, you're the smartest man in the world. You kind of should be in on this. You know, or Tony Stark or somebody else. Like, it just doesn't... Spider-Man having a sidekick is not right. You know, let him... Or a permanent sidekick, especially one that's as powered as this guy, and already to deem him as powerful, no more powerful than the Hulk, who is the strongest one there is, and the Sentry and all these guys. It's just poor execution, and just proves that Slott revels in this Silver Age Historia. He's like the not angry Alex Ross, in that he's just all happy and rainbows. And you know, for the 50th anniversary issue of Spider-Man, I could have sworn I was sold Spider-Man. If I wanted to read an origin close to Spider-Man, I would have watched or read a origin with Spider-Man. I don't need a fucking retread. I understand that Barry Allen and Wally West have the exact same origin. Again, I said, that happened in 1958. A different time. Now, you just seem like a damn hack. And the fact is, at first I was angry. Now I'm more just sad and disappointed that this is what my title, my favorite book, my favorite character has come to. That this is where it's at. Like I ran and raved on how bad the Clone Saga is, and maybe it's because I've been spoiled with Spider-Man issues of recent years, that this is just horribly horrendous in comparison. Ramos, as usual, was just terrible. I couldn't tell what was going on in certain panels. You know, I don't hate the anime look, but he doesn't do it really well for me. Like, there are guys who I've seen do the anime look, and it just doesn't fit with me. I've never liked his depictions of Spider-Man, especially not here. I hated this. For the 50th anniversary issue, this is what you roll out. And I'm sure Slott thought this was the greatest thing ever. But for me, I thought it was a piece of shit. And the fact that I know Alpha's going to be continuing, if not in other books, definitely in this title, it hurts. It actually hurts. Yeah, that is, I'm fat and I'm eating too much fast food. But this gets a 2 out of 5. It was... The only reason it gets a 2 is because of the two backup stories. But my God, I mean... Now I'm legitimately worried. What the hell are you going to do for 700? Which is only a few months away now. I don't like lazy writing. I don't like where it's this blatant. Lazy writing, where you couldn't think of an original idea, but you wanted to be cute and honor. There are better ways to honor the legacy of Spider-Man than to recopy and paste an origin, you know, to a different, to a new character. I have no problem with new characters. I have no problem with new characters. I have a problem when you want to make it all cutesy and, you know, I understand the point is, I think Alpha is supposed to be unlikable, you know. But if I wanted to read a person who's like that, I would fucking read Eddie Brock as Venom. I would rather read, I'd read that.
But Eddie's not supposed to be unlikable.
He's a scumbag.
Exactly, unlikable.
He's, I don't find him unlikable at all. I don't.
Not recently, but like in the past. He's kind of redeemed himself.
But he was a Venom.
He was a douche.
Yeah, so you reading Eddie Brock as Venom... When
I would rather... What I'm saying is I would rather read that versus in this.
But not in Venom. Clarify.
I would rather read Venom when Eddie Brock first had Venom versus this character right now. I just think it was awful. I think it was lazy. That's pretty much what my review comes down to. You know, and... He's, as long as Sock's on the book, this character is going to exist. I'm hoping Scarlet Witch does a no more alpha and he goes away. 2 out of 5. I'm in a sad state of depression right now, guys. It's not even fucking funny. It's not even fucking funny.
Okay, then.
All right, well, there you go. Let's go to individual reviews. But so I'm going to quickly switch, go 180. I'm reviewing Punisher number 14, which is done by Greg Rucka and the Fantastic, I believe it's Suyan, Miko Suyan. Basically, this is this felt very much like I was watching Christopher Nolan direct a Punisher movie, in that everything the Punisher does, I really like this depiction of Greg Rucka's Punisher in that everything he does has a logical sense of what he does. He doesn't just go in guns blazing. That's fine and entertaining, and he shoots a Mexican. Cool. But here the Punisher thinks, and he says, you got to do these things. You got to do things. This is how we take them out. This is very much Punisher just taking the bad guys to school in that, you know, he begins the assault on the exchange. Rachel Alves infiltrates the compound. Not secretly. Actually, like, goes up as if she's going to surrender, and Punisher snipes two of the guys who are supposed to snipe him, and he basically busts in, and all hell breaks loose. He actually uses Spider-Man's gauntlet web shooters to web-sling his way into the building, which I thought was pretty cool. I was like, oh yeah, he probably stole that from on the last issue.
He pulls a Tarzan. Oh,
well, he has a gas mask on, so if he's doing it, he's doing it in quietly. But Rachel Alice finally gets revenge on the woman who sent the orders to kill her husband. And so she basically ends the issue saying, now let's burn this place down. I'm loving this. I'm loving this book so much. Not necessarily because of the Punisher, but because of the idea of what Rekka's doing with the Punisher. And that he's not just a homicidal maniac, which can be fine and entertaining, but I like this approach of the cerebral. He's a Marine. He's not an idiot. He has some brains. He knows his shit. And I just found it really cool to see him using the web shooters. I wouldn't think he knew how to use that, but I guess he figured it out. That was a great page of him. And plus, if you just look at it, like, he's actually dressed appropriately. He's not just in his old costume. Everything he wears has a purpose. Like knee pads and all these pouches. Not like 90s ridiculous, but like, you know, things he needs to carry. His vest is actually bulletproof and not just, you know, as if somebody painted his skin black. You know, he wears hardline boots. Like, everything has a logical sense to it, which is what Ruck is bringing to it. And this is just slowly, slowly building. Like, you don't assault a building like this and you don't get the Avengers notice, and this is what it's building to. So yeah, I give this a 4 out of 5. Again, the most underrated book at Marvel right now is The Punisher. So yeah, I can't wait till Warzone. Let's go ahead and take it over to Taser, who's giving us the finale for Super Crooks.
Yeah, we were left off with the girlfriend having been caught by what the hell was his name? Gladiator? Good guy. I want to say freaking Ultra Boy, because that's really what he looked like. He had a Cosmo Ultra Boy. He had a myriad of different powers that he used at once. Plus, he was an enforcer. And actually, there's a version of Ultra Boy that actually did that. But be that as it may, she gets picked up at the airport because, you know, she was leaving all in a huff. And she forgot to disguise herself. So, yeah, you know, she gets snatched. Meanwhile, the others, they make their way through the vault using the various gadgets and abilities and what have you, some of which is like, wow, this guy, one guy's got Dr. Octopus-esque arms, and the two brothers who basically heal everything, they go through that room with the lasers, and they just go through, they heal up, go through more, they heal up, and they get cut down the entire length of the passageway, because apparently the lasers work with like on a DNA sequence, and if anybody but the master, if anybody but him goes through, yeah, it just dices you. But these guys, they pull a Wolverine, they get cut up, they heal, they get cut up, they heal, and they just make their way the entire length of the chamber, leaving bits and pieces of themselves. And by bits, I'm talking arms, legs. In one case, looks like almost a whole body. There's a butt cheek in one segment. There's a full lower half. It is probably not disturbing, but it is freaking hilarious to watch this happen. And that's how they actually managed to defeat that bit of protective device. And, you know, they get into the vault, they melt down the door, like, ooh, big whoop. And inside is a suitcase, which is basically a giant tesseract, which is a tesseract. And inside is way bigger than the outside. It's... Imagine Scrooge McDuck from DuckTales, and you have a suitcase that opens up into his vault. Yeah, that's what we're looking at here. So, the girl, she's caught, she's brought back to the master, she's interrogated, you know, they attempt to put her through the ringer. Meanwhile, the guys, they get busted because, you know, she kind of figures out, you know, they figure out exactly what's going on, and, you know, payroll guy ends up going down there, and, well, you know, they get thumped around a bit, and the one superhero that they were blackmailing, I believe he was Gladiator, he kind of hangs back and watches them get thumped around. I'm like, yeah, I kind of expected that to happen, you know? Meanwhile, girlfriend, she was trying to do her best to throw off the master, and she loses. It looks like she loses the fight. You know, side of her head just, you know, a flashback, and it's a full scale brawl downstairs. You know, bodyguards, you know, blasting people left and right, and he's doing all this crap, and you know, they're all like, "Oh my god, won't you do something?" He's tearing us apart. Oh my god, and you know, the Pink Powerpuff. He sees them get knocked around enough, and he decides to step in.
Oh, God, and that's the best scene in the book.
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, what the hell are you doing? Are you trying to commit suicide? Who the hell are you to stand there and judge me? I'm a superhero, asshole. What the hell are you? Oh my Jesus, goddamn Christ, Gladiator, I'm so sorry. If I'd have known that was you under there, I never would have. Shut up! And he floors him. With a blow. One freaking blow. That's just... Wow. Just wow. Meanwhile, you know, our hero Danny Ocean, because I can't remember his name to save my life, he's like, we never kill him. Oh my god. He's like, shut up. He's alive. I just hurt him a little bit. He's out
cold. He's just brain damage.
Yeah, you know, you can bounce out of here. Let's go. Come on, guys, let's go. They're all... crap kicked out of them and everything like that. Meanwhile, the master thinks that he's gone and done what he needed to do. And then he realizes something's not right. So, sure enough, you know, the veneer peels back and he realizes he's been played. You know, he was never, he thought that he had taken the girl and they had gone back to his place and he interrogated her and, you know, ha, I've beaten you. I am the master and now I execute you. Ho ho. But in reality, what happened was she guided them over to this abandoned amusement park, and he ended up blowing away the head of his henchman. He was like, "The what? No!" And, you know, basically you got your epilogue. You know, you see what the various criminals do. Of course, the old guy, he takes and squanders it like a retard. 1 year later, and he's left with like $2,000 out of 100 mil. They broke up. It was like 800 something mil. They ended up with 100 mil each. 100 mil each. On top of which, because my man Billy Ocean, he played it smart. He framed the guys that were going to kill the old man. So basically the master went, and these guys, they did this under, you know, your orders. And he kills all of them. So basically old dude doesn't have to pay the debt back. So he's got 100 mil to himself. But he blows it. You know, I could believe that a person can blow that much money in a year, but you really need to be that careless to do so.
Well, he might die soon. Maybe he's just thinking, hey, screw it.
Oh, it's just... Look, dude, one of them bought a space shuttle. Okay, now, when it comes to holy gee whiz damn... purchases? That's not a bad one. That's not a bad one at all. And of course, Gladiator ends up coming out, realizing that half his teammates were gay, and they watch, and then we see him marching in the gay pride parade. Like, hello! Let's hear it for LBGT and all the rest of that stuff. Of course, Danny Ocean and the girlfriend, he proposes to her, and she tells him she'll think about it. Like, hot damn. And that's what she wanted the whole time, and now she's, you know, gonna play that game, but whatever. But the fact that the old man ended up with that little money. Good Lord. Wow. But, you know, it ends with him rolling the dice and then changes his mind at the last minute because he kind of figured out he probably crapped out. That was the end. That was a good book. You know, that was a good story. This had a good end. I enjoyed it. It had, what was it, Lionel Yu and Mark Miller? Thumbs up. You know, I had no problem with the story, no problem with the art. I don't want to say it was still or anything, but, you know, both of them worked to tell this story well. I would say go out and get the trade when it comes out. Hopefully this comes out in trade. It is definitely worth it. I give it 4.5 stars. 4.5 Warriors out of 5. This was a pleasure to read. It really was.
Well, I look forward to picking up the trade when it comes out. Let's go to B-Ride next with our weekly Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe update.
Yes, this is the final issue in the series. So, let's begin, shall we? We open to just a huge metahuman brawl going on in the middle of New York City. We got the Shocker fighting Black Widow, Green Goblin attacking the Swordsman, we got Doc Ock fighting off Gargoyle, and Hitmonkey's actually in there too, so, yeah. Anyway, it appears that for all intents and purposes, pretty much every single superhero and supervillain in this world has gone completely out of their mind. Everyone's, you know, tearing up the place, and there's actually a huge line of some of the bigger players like the Kingpin and Nick Fury, and they're all lined up on this building about to commit mass suicide. And the media, they don't know what to make of it. They're wondering, like, is it like the end of days? Is it finally the community itself just collapsing in on themselves? Well, no. But Frank Castle knows what's wrong. It's Deadpool. And in the lower floors of the building where the mass suicide is going to happen, we see Punisher staring at Deadpool through the scope of a sniper. He manages to blast him in the head, and he has to get over there before his healing factor compensates for it. As he's walking, he just kind of like strides out of the building across the street, just casually blows some brains out here and there, and finally lets himself in. And as he's going to completely just finally kill Deadpool, he finds out it's not Deadpool. Turns out all this shit has been happening because Deadpool has been in control of the Puppet Master, who has been controlling every single person with a fancy little voodoo doll. And so Frank Castle's kind of like, Puppet Master, what the hell? And then we get Deadpool coming into the scene and paralyze Frank with his own little special doll. He even takes the time to mock Frank. Dear War Journal. Today, after years of being a hard-ass killer of criminals, I got pwned by a cabbage head doll. Thanks for nothing, Righteous Fury and Vengeance. And then he makes Frank blow his brains out. So, essentially, Deadpool is pretty much just offing anybody and everybody he can. We even get one glimpse of... Oh, you're going to love this. Somehow, some way, the Puppet Master, whatever magic he found back in the Sanctorum last issue, has given him the power to kill the Silver Surfer, Gladiator, Thanos, Galactus, and Nova. Yeah. And so, after finally offing what he thinks is enough people and moving on from there, killing essentially everybody, every superhero he could get his hands on, we find the Taskmaster tracking Deadpool. He finally finds him in a swamp somewhere. Now, Deadpool said, given Taskmaster's ability to, you know, take on the abilities and, you know, mimic others and stuff, that he was the natural selection for being Deadpool's final battle in this reality. I mean, he's just the pale shadow, the fleeting memories of all the people who have already ganked. It had to be you and me, because deep down, you know, a little piece of you has died with everyone I've killed. And so, without any more, you know, they just go at it. They absolutely tear into each other without heat, and it's crazy. And eventually it gets to a point where Taskmaster is watching Deadpool using his ability to pick up on his movements and stuff. And then, for whatever reason, this is exactly what the voice in Deadpool's head wants to happen, because Taskmaster begins to think like Deadpool. He begins to see what Deadpool sees, and he can actually hear the voice in his head. He can hear it, even though it's only a voice in Deadpool's head. And so they keep fighting each other, and it turns out this whole thing was a trap just for Taskmaster. He planned to infect Taskmaster with the knowledge that he has, and Taskmaster gets, you know, scared, not in so many words, but he's afraid. And who should come along in this fancy little swamp and finish off Taskmaster? Why, Man-Thing! Because that made sense, you know. Anyway, Deadpool goes off on a... Deadpool pretty much says that, you know, since he feels fear, Man-Thing uses his power to, you know, have Taskmaster burn at Man-Thing's touch. It's his shtick, I guess. I wouldn't know, I don't read Man-Thing. But anyway, as Man-Thing is about to go and off Deadpool, we get an interesting little exchange happening here. Essentially, Man-Thing is the guardian and the key to the nexus of all realities. Has that been established somewhere else? Anybody? No? Anyone? Okay. But it's just, it's... So apparently, Man-Thing not only understands what Deadpool wants to do, but sympathizes with him and sacrifices himself to open the gate for Deadpool to enter the nexus of all realities. And so, we see Deadpool swimming through just, you know, the ether. He's kind of like, he sees every version of himself that could possibly be out there. One where he's the leader of the X-Men, one where he's the president and he's meeting Elvis. There's references to, like, Dogpool and Kidpool, and there's Deadpool Pulp thrown in there. And one where he's the Phoenix Force. And it's all this crazy shit happening. And basically, the goal here, or what we should take away from this, is that there's really no goal. Deadpool just wants to kill everything that... He's pretty much just trying to kill what's responsible for his own suffering. And that's, as far as he's concerned, is everything. And so finally, we see him find what he considers to be the center point of all reality. And he gets flung out of this hole, giggity. And we see him closing in on a conference room in Marvel Comics where they're planning the last issue of Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe number 4. As he is approaching, they are narrating what he is doing, but they do not know that he is going to do it to them. So, the issue ends with Deadpool in the quote-unquote real universe about to hack to death Cullen Bunn, Dalibor Telajic, and a couple other guys. And that pretty much concludes the issue. This issue really just kind of... I mean, it confused me a little bit, just the whole Nexus of All Realities and the plan, quote-unquote, that did confuse me. But more than that, I think what this issue really lacked from was a definitive ending. It's just, like, we don't really know what's going to happen beyond it, because they put him in the real world. How can you top that? How can you pick up the ball and run with that when you've already put him in reality? How can you do that? So, you know, that set aside, Deadpool killing more people and stuff and trying to find greater meaning, it's not really there, which is disappointing because I was really digging this story. And this is the issue that just kind of drops the ball a little bit. It's just there isn't really, you know, they don't really clearly define what the plan is. They don't define what Deadpool really, what his endgame is or where he's going to go to complete it or how far he's going to go. They don't tell you what the voice in his head is. They don't tell you if he's ever going to make it to other realities or if he's going to make it back to his own reality. And they leave the ending open and ambiguous because he's standing there ready to hack him to death. But then that causes the conundrum that if he kills guys writing a story, then he ceases to exist in this story. And so there cannot be this story, but he is also in the story, and he ends up in the room where they're planning the story, and he can't kill them, because if he kills them, there's no story, so how did he get there in the first place? And it's paradox. The issue ends with a paradox, and I really wish it was still just him killing people. I miss it already, and it, like, most of the issue is pretty much him just straight up killing people, but going into this, I expected a payoff. I expected his plan to be laid out, what he wanted, who the voice was in his head. We don't get any of that. We just kind of get a wink and a nod, the most contrived way to end a fourth wall story. He ends up in the real world. Well, the guy breaking the fourth wall, wow, who would have imagined he would have, you know, wound up in the real world? Who would have thought? The ending itself was contrived and predictable and open, which disappointed me. Overall, the series was good. It was good, don't get me wrong. I love these issues. And the point of Deadpool just going seriously killing everybody, that was a good read. I could read that. You know, how he plans to kill everybody, how he does it, why he does it. But there's no payoff here. And that really disappoints me. Because I wanted a payoff. I know there's not much to explain in the mind of an insane person, but explain it, Cullen Bunn. Explain what you're doing. And it's... So, needless to say, if you can't already tell from my ranting, the issue was a bit lackluster compared to the rest of them. I would probably give this issue in and of itself a 3 out of 5, because this issue did have its good parts. The parts with Punisher and Taskmaster, they were really well done. It's just... when it finally gets to the point of explaining what the point is, it's not really done that well. And it's kind of just leaves you hanging. So that part disappointed him, but it's like 50-50 good and bad. Overall, I would probably give the issue a 4, 4.5 out of 5. It was a really, really good series, and I would recommend it to someone, but I would preface it with like, hey, look, if you really were looking for like a clear explanation here, you know, don't expect it coming because it's not really going to be there. So that said, you know, overall, the series overall, I give it like a 4, 4.5 out of 5. This issue itself, I give a 3 out of 5. Maybe a 2.5 if I'm in a bit of a shitty mood, but that's where we stand right now with Deadpool Coast of the Marvel Universe. So,
well, there you go. Sometimes you can't get what you want at the end. Yeah. Last but not least, the only AVX tie-in is going to be discussed this week, Uncanny X-Men number 17.
Arnold!
You! Okay, I'm going to fight this quickly because this book kind of... As Uncanny X-Men has been as of late for the longest time, pissing me off. This is still dealing with the Sinister stuff from... didn't we start with Sinister, if I'm not mistaken? When number one came through, we were dealing with Sinister still, battling him and this whole world that he created and stuff. So last we saw is that the Phoenix Five, because this takes place before Namor and... Colossus and Magic all lose the Phoenix Force. So I would say this is around AVX issue 5 or 6, let's say. So they're at Sinister's new Sinister London that he created that has nothing but clone Sinisters that all share the same kind of hive mind thing. He has somehow managed to capture the Phoenix 5 and has siphoned off the Phoenix Force from them and is putting them into his 4 cloned Madeline Pryors that he's got running. Throughout the course of this, even though they were told by Scott not to come, Psylocke, Danger, Storm, and Magneto have gone to try and assist, as it were, to get past their barriers. Psylocke wears Danger as an armor so that she can, you know, remodulate brain waves, whatever the case may be, so she can't be detected. While all this is going on, Storm and Magneto are holding off the horde of Sabretooths, the clone Sabretooths that Sinister created, and what a cool thing I will say. Psylocke made them all eat each other, thinking that they actually killed the X-Men that were there, and they were eating the X-Men, but in all actuality, they were just eating each other. I don't know if it counts as cannibalism if you're a clone. So, but if it is clone cannibalism, we'll call it, for lack of a better term. So they get past that. Naturally, through the course of the fight, Magneto gets taken over by Madeline Pryor immensely after they used the Phoenix power to...
Madeline Pryor's in this?
They're clones of Madeline Pryor.
Oh.
Sinister's tons of fucking ex-clones that he's got running around all over the
galaxy. You think Cyclops has a red-headed fetish? Jesus.
Well, he made clones of, well, you know, Nathaniel's always had a love for the...
You called him Nathaniel.
And the Summers and everything. Well, that's his name.
I know, it's just funny.
You know, he's always had a hard-on for... the Greys and the Summers family, etc. So, that aside, Phoenix Force clone Madeline Pryor disintegrates Magneto's helmet and takes over his mind and sends him after Psylocke and the rest of the crew. Psylocke manages to inject him with some kind of drug that I guess she just happened to have on her at the time that knocks out Magneto and took him off the board. They defeat that Madeline Pryor. She starts to lose some of the power. The energy fluctuations are fucking up the other Madeline Pryors as Sinister is scrambling to try and fix his unpredicted, which is a shock to him because he's got plans for everything as stated where he says, we're up to part 43 of my plan. I don't know how many fucking parts it has. So during this kind of break of time, Emma uses that window of opportunity to tap into the mind of the Phoenix Force, as it were, and say, you know, this isn't what you want. You're better than this. He'll just cage you up and never use you, whereas, you know, your life, you need to be better than this, and Phoenix is like, oh, but I exist, that should be enough, and Emma's like, no, you know, you're here for a purpose, etc., etc. So Phoenix Force rebels from the Madeline Pryors, as it were, and pretty much tells Sinister that she, you know, is everything, she is life, she is the unpredictable, and as for all intents and purposes, has killed and disintegrated the real Sinister, which none of the X-Men were able to do. And now the Phoenix Force is back completely in the Phoenix Force 5. Blah is what I can say about this book. And I love Sinister. I have never been so disinterested in Sinister than I am now. Like, they've almost taken him and make him a character that I couldn't stand to read anymore. And again, I really do like Sinister. But it's just, it's over and done with. Like, it's something that you started when this story began, when this comic book began, yet it's still being used to tie into AVX. So my question now is, was the whole Sinister thing forced to tie into AVX? So this was this where it was going all along? I don't know. I don't get. It just seems like the book was an ends to a means where it's not really tying into AVX. It just happens to be going on at the same time. And they said, fuck it. We've got the Phoenix powers. So let's go and fuck up Sinister since we couldn't do it with the normal powers. The art I do like, though. I do like Acuna's art. It's, there are moments of it where it's very reminiscent of, especially with Psylocke, where it's reminiscent of Aeon Flux or Reign the Conqueror. It's got kind of that feel to it, which I was always a big fan of. On the whole, I will give this a 2.5 out of 5. I can't believe I'm saying it, but I get closer and closer and closer to dropping Uncanny X-Men completely.
Just do it, man! I'm in the same boat with Amazing Spider-Man, so I sympathize with you, brother.
I just, for a book that was so good.
I know, right? To quote Hal Jordan.
Yeah, this is the first I've wanted to drop this book, and I've been reading Uncanny since at least House of M, if not longer.
Slash me Slash. Hugs Arnold Alfred. All right. Well, that's going to be do for individual reviews. Time for our Verses of the Week, which we haven't done in a while. This time, we're going to be pitting two cosmic forces together. It's going to be the Void, a.k.a. the Sentry, a.k.a. the Void, a.k.a. the Sentry, versus the Phoenix Force.
Ooh.
So, now that we have this going away, going down, I'm going to say the Phoenix Force. Simple. Throw him in the sun. Sentry loses. Sentry's a bitch. I mean, seriously, the thing about the Sentry and the Void is that we know it can handle godlike powers. It pretty much pwned Thor during Siege. But outside of that, it was just basically the Sentry's negative side. So really just an evil Superman. The Phoenix Force 5, the Phoenix Force in and of itself needs a host by itself. I don't know what it would do. I think if given the right host, it would easily beat the Sentry. Given the wrong host, it could still beat the Sentry. Giving no host, it could. Point is, Phoenix Force beats the Void every time. Throw it in the sun.
You're just gonna call it like that?
Throw it in the sun.
Sun toss, huh?
Just a sun toss.
Well, see,
seriously,
it's like a hip toss, but like very far away.
See, that's kind of just. First of all, it's sloppy.
The thing is with the Void is that it was just basically Sentry's negative side. It didn't have psychic capabilities. It didn't. It could handle godlike beings.
It didn't have psychic. It infected Cyclops' mind in one issue of the X-Men. It infected his mind.
The Phoenix Force can infect your mind.
The thing totally has a psychic. I
don't think that would work against the Phoenix, though. So
I'm not saying he could use it as like the Phoenix Force. Like he could use it to destroy it. I'm just saying that. Hey, you know, the Void is. We don't really know what it is. It's never really been well defined.
Which is why it loses, because we know what the Phoenix can do. And for all intents and purposes, the Void is just evil Sentry.
Can the Void alter or destroy a universe on a whim?
No. They never did it, so it was just super powerful. That was all it was, and we never really knew its capabilities.
It was basically Molecule Man, post retcon. Because if you see, here's where I have to step in and say, if you remember Secret Wars 2, way back in the day, that kind of made Molecule Man somebody who was in the Beyonders class. You know, yeah. Beyonder would have pwned Phoenix. All right. But, you know, somebody said, no, that's too powerful, let's bring it back down some, which I can't say I totally disagree with. Remember that story in, New Avengers, where Sentry was just getting killed over and beaten over and over and over again, and you find out it was Molecule Man behind everything until he figured out, Sentry figured out that his power isn't speed and strength and this and that and everything else like that, but he controls molecules. He's just like Molecule Man, and he does the same thing to him. All right, it's simply how he manifested that ability. You know, he made himself, I guess, durable, and he moved himself super fast by molecularization or whatever the hell, you know, some bullshit. But I don't think that I have never seen, to touch on what Alfred said, the Phoenix destroy a universe at a whim, you know, not effortlessly. I'll put it that way. I think the Phoenix could do it if, you know, we're talking the entire universe working at it. Yeah, he could if he was unopposed. It was unopposed. But you can beat the Phoenix. You know, I mean, it's not unbeatable. It's just that, you know, if you try to go, I am mighty, and hit it, and, you know, fuck you. the Phoenix being top shelf, I don't think the Void would really... It might screw with one, maybe two, but you got three others. You know, three others there. And, yeah, that's a dog pile. You know? I don't see Void taking it home without, you know, some bit of outside bullshit, you know, being applied here. You know, or maybe, I don't know, Namor going, I don't feel like touching this thing. I'll just sit it out, and then I don't know. I can't see it happening, personally. I say PFF all the way. That would be me being done.
All right, Suntoss, Arnold.
He goes with a BFR.
That's the title episode, Suntoss.
See, that's where Superman is better, because you toss him in the sun, oh shit, we done made him more powerful.
You done fucked up right there. Arnold, who do you think wins, the Phoenix Force 5 or the Void?
The Phoenix Force or the Void? Phoenix. Like Taser, I don't think the Phoenix Force is unbeatable. It's just not beatable by the Void. But yeah, I mean, it literally, civilizations/universes have ignited, grown, and disintegrated on the whim in the mere moments of the Phoenix. And as powerful as the Void is, I don't think he's able to, like, wipe something out instantaneously like that. Like, the swiftness that world that was first destroyed when the Phoenix Force first took over Jean, as far as I've ever read about the Void, he cannot do that. So if you say begin, and all Phoenix Force has to be like is disintegrate the Void, then that's probably the end of the Void. You don't even need the sun. Hell, the Phoenix Force is probably as hot as the sun from the way that they draw it all the way. At least that's how I picture the Phoenix. Picture like sun levels of heat and fire. Around that are living in the comic book universe, I don't know, standing in the vicinity of Phoenix Force, but Phoenix Force takes it, man.
You know what I think, if I might interject, what I think might be a better fight? What if one-fifth of the Phoenix Force, let's say Void versus Cyclops?
Right.
That, I think, might be the more interesting, you know, fight to
Suntoss.
To win this.
For God's sake, shut up about the sun toss.
And also, again, we also have to gauge is how watered down or diminished is one-fifth of the Phoenix Force, though.
Okay, we've seen...
They're still pretty powerful.
Namor got dogpiled, so...
It's just guy this time. It's just one entity.
Yeah, one-fifth. One-fifth of the Phoenix Force.
Going off of what happened with Namor and shit, then... Yeah,
Namor's pretty much a bitch, though. So
but she still had the fucking Phoenix Force. It doesn't matter.
That's true.
You could be the bitchiest of bitches on the planet. You could be a fucking ant if you're the ant with the
like
Phoenix
Bri-Bri. Force. Like
Bri-Bri. Full of Terraform.
Oh.
What did you just say to me?
He called you bitchy McBitch bitch bitch. Bitch.
Bitch 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 bitch.
I want McDougal.
Oh my God. No habla español.
Hold on. Let Alfred finish his thing. He had a thought. Hold on. Let him get it out.
The one fit that does make it interesting, and I would probably have to put some serious thought into that. But if it's just one force against one force, I think the Phoenix takes it this time around.
Fuck yeah, it does. Brian, who takes it? Are you going to make it a clean sweep?
Let me just preface this by saying I only asked this. This was done, I think, almost a month or two ago.
Why do you assume it's your idea? It's not your idea.
It came from the matter when I was talking about, you know, Cyclops having that sliver of the void in his head and the Phoenix Force possessing him. This is just, I want to preface that. And it was my idea, god damn it, so shut up.
I don't know why
you... Hey, why are you taking credit for my idea?
Taser
judge! Not nice.
God. Anyway. I'm not gonna win this. I'll still say void and I lose this argument, so I'm gonna stick to my guns.
Why in your opinion does the void win?
Because as much as you say the reason why he loses is because we don't know anything about it, I say that's exactly why we win. We don't know the full capabilities of this thing. It has taken over the mind and body of a man who has the power of 1,000 exploding suns.
But is it the man of the exploding
suns? A man who has fought Hulk to a standstill. A man who has single-handedly killed Molecule Man. He killed Molecule Man.
But Molecule Man got better.
Phoenix.
And you're telling me he still loses.
But none of those things are more powerful than the Phoenix right now. One fifth of the Phoenix, maybe, but Molecule Man is no way in hell more powerful than the Phoenix.
Fuck no, he isn't.
Not post-retcon, anyway.
Was again, just like psychic energy? I think that was about how they defined it as. Was that it?
It depends on which the definition of it you're paying attention to.
Well, see, that's the thing. How many definitions of the Phoenix Force are there?
500 billion souls.
So how am I supposed to pit a fair fight from one to the other if I don't even know which Phoenix Force I'm dealing with?
Phoenix Force is an entity itself.
Maybe this was a lost cause to begin with, but I stick to my guns and I say the void simply because I don't know which
true. Why are you going to make fun of Taser's idea now? That's not even funny.
Yeah, why are you stealing my idea?
My God.
Not only did you steal it, but you're making fun of it. That's not
I
cool.
hate all of you. And I still say the void. I go for the underdog. Right.
Go for it.
Sun
or the unknown.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me ask this. Do you think it turns into a brawler? Or is it a power? A fight of...
It's a meeting of the
minds. Power and abilities.
The void?
Yeah, Void versus Phoenix Force 5. Do you see that as just a knockdown slug out, sluggo?
I think it's a full expenditure of just energy being flung at one another.
I think that there are like realities and shit being crossed during a fight between those two.
Yeah.
That would be, that actually might prove interesting. To see them fighting across multiple planes of existence.
Space kind of thing that would be going on.
If Sentry was still alive right now in Marvel continuity, I almost wish he would have gotten an AVX issue where he just fought someone from the Phoenix Force. I honestly wish that fight would have happened.
I'm sure he's alive.
I don't think he's been brought back since Siege ended.
That doesn't mean somebody. I'm pretty sure we'll see him back.
I wish he was involved in this.
Sentry ain't dead. There you go.
Yeah,
fine. I don't think he's dead either. He's too powerful to keep dead. But I just wish he was involved in this so we could get a glimpse of it. That would be awesome. But yeah, void. End of story.
Suntoss. Let's end this episode. You can. I love that phrase. Suntoss. You can follow us at twitter.com/warriors3pcast. Email us at thewarriorsphere@gmail.com. I just released a episode of the RPG show, which you can find at therpgshow.blogspot.com, which we talked about Darksiders 2, mentioned other M, Kid Icarus Uprising, and some other game Colton played, I don't remember. Also, coming soon, sometime this week, the D-Cups episode where we talk about with my friend Brian.
Yo.
Talk about Dark Knight Rises, the Nolan trilogy as a whole, and Warner Brothers movies, Warner Brothers superhero movies in their future. And you'll notice that I like to say Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern over and over and over.
Oh my God, that was so fucking annoying. I hated you for that.
That being said, Brian's this idea stealer. We'll see y'all next week for episode number 116.
It was my idea! I swear, I'm not crazy. I know what I'm talking about.
He's not crazy. La 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 la.
You're gonna get your wish.
Oh, no.
Well, my God.